All right, welcome back here to wrap up the first hour of the weekend edition of the KE Report. I am replaying a company update from Eloro Resources that we posted on Thursday. I chose to replay this company update because these are some significant drill results. Again, out of Eloro Resources, we received a lot of feedback, positive feedback on the back of this interview. So I did want to highlight it again on this weekend show. But just remember, everybody, we have been featuring a lot of companies with a lot of company updates because I think in these slow markets, now is the time to reanalyze your portfolio and make sure that the companies you're invested in are doing the right work. And even though the share price might not be moving now, at least the ones doing the right work and having good success should be the shares that bounce back the quickest. I hope you all enjoy this interview. To hear the full Eloro interview, click on that Thursday posting. Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. We are getting an update from Eloro Resources, traded on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol ELO and on the OTCQX under the symbol ELRRF. Chad and I are chatting with Quentin Henney, the technical advisor over at Eloro Resources, and we are following up on a news release that came out earlier this week, July 28th. It released four more drill hole assay results, the headline number here being 129 grams per ton silver equivalent over 300 meters. And this is the mineralized envelope of the Santa Barbara Breccia pipe, all at this Isca silver tin polymetallic project in Bolivia. Now, Quentin, there are a number of different minerals that came into that silver equivalent calculation. Break down the type of minerals that you saw in the results and the importance, I'm guessing, of each and every one of them.
Okay, that's a really good place to start. Look, these systems in Bolivia are very, very interesting. They're amazing deposits because they host a large number of transitional metals. These are, if you look at the periodic table, basically all those metals kind of in the middle of the periodic table are what we call transition elements. Okay, and these metal-rich porphyries, these metal-rich magmas that came up in Bolivia tend to generate what we call polymetallic deposits. Okay, these are deposits that have many different metals associated with them. There are many deposits of this type across Bolivia, the southern part of south central Bolivia. This is a prolific belt with many world-class deposits. Potosí is one of the biggest. Well, it is the biggest silver deposit on Earth, but it also has zinc and lead and tin and a lot of these other metals we have. What do we have? Well, we have silver, we have zinc and lead. We have a bit of tin, and in places we have a lot of tin. Okay, there is a tin porphyry here. We also have copper in places. We have gold in places. We have exotic metals, bismuth, things like indium, cadmium. I could ramble off a few others too. Okay, now one of the challenges we face as a company is presenting this data to investors. People go, "Oh, wow, that's interesting. There's a lot of metal here. What does it mean?" Okay, we break it down and we present it as silver equivalency. Now, we recognize that silver in many places is not necessarily the dominant economic mineral in this. But if you do it in that respect, people tend to rationalize things better. They tend to understand things better. Now, I'm a gold guy, okay? So the numbers that you just rambled off, the 300 meters of 129 gram silver equivalent, if you translate that to gold, I'm talking just raw dollar value, which is what I'm doing here, is about 1.8 gram gold equivalent. Okay, now if this was a gold dominant system and we could report a number like 300 meters of 1.8 gram gold equivalent, I think most people would get that, like in a heartbeat. I recognize that there are places in this deposit where one metal might dominate over another. For instance, down in the tin part, there's a lot more value in the tin than there is anything else, including the silver. Other places, we have silver combined with zinc and lead primarily. Okay, so the system is zoned. We've talked about it in a couple of news releases recently. That's why we kind of, you know, it's like having an apple in this drill hole and an orange in this drill hole. We try to present this data in a meaningful way to all investors.
Well, Quentin, I'm glad you clarified that, because there has been a lot of chatter on some of the chat boards about why is it being reported in silver equivalent, and that clears it up. If it was reported in zinc or lead or one of the other minerals, you could still do that, but investors may not be able to interpret it as well as when you put it in silver terms or gold terms. But you brought up the tin there, and there's also been some discussion about what is the importance of the tin in these kind of deposits that we see in Bolivia and these big silver tin systems. So could you also just clarify that again? We've touched on it in the past, but I think it's an important element that you're seeing that tin in there and what that could mean to the economics of a deposit of this size.
Certainly. Look, the porphyries, the magmas that are kind of solidified down in the ground, kind of a little bit below these deposits, are often tin rich. All right. And in this case, our tin porphyry is a bit further south from where these drill holes that were announced in this release are located. Okay, so the tin porphyry is more down towards the central part of this target area that we're drilling. Now, the tin at Iskia, in some of the tin intercepts or the drill holes that we've drilled down into that regime, the tin is running 0.4-0.5%. You can look back at our previous news release. This is a few weeks ago. And you'll see some very high-grade tins. Now, that's astonishing, guys. 0.4% tin, for example, is about twice the grade of most tin porphyries in Bolivia. So to me, that says this is a very strong system. It's demonstrating it can make high-grade tin. Tin is now around $37,000 a metric ton. If people don't understand tin, the meaning of that, that's almost, not quite, but almost four times the price of copper. Okay, think about that for a minute. 0.4% tin, holy cow, that's like saying 1.6% copper almost, or something of that ilk. Like, again, we're trying to help people rationalize this by making comparison to what this means in context of other types of intercepts they might be more familiar with.
So, Quentin, it does sound like people are still wondering about the economics of a project like this because of all the different minerals. And I understand what you're saying. There's that many of these do carry some very nice values. But when it comes to mining these deposits, is there complexities around it? What can you tell us about maybe other deposits that are very similar to this that are being mined and how you can mine a deposit like this?
Yes, there's actually a number of deposits of this type being mined in Bolivia. And, I'll pick Minera San Cristobal as an example. Minera San Cristobal is a ways west of Iskia. I think it's about 100 kilometers due west, or more or less. I might be off by a bit. But it is mining primarily zinc-lead mineralization with silver. Okay, the grade of silver, I believe, is hovering around 20 grams per ton silver. And the combined zinc and lead maybe constitute about 1.6%. Okay, what does Minera San Cristobal do? What does it deliver? Well, look, it is a remarkable deposit. It's been mined for about 11 or 12, maybe 13 years now, continuously. And it has been one of the best economic returns for Sumitomo Corporation. It is a wonderful deposit. Okay, the zinc and the lead basically pay, and this is at 1.6%, guys. The zinc and the lead pay for the cost of mining and processing. Okay, guess what? That means the silver is for free. Now, there was a time where they were producing around, I think, 20 or 25 million ounces of silver per annum. I think it's now on the order of 10 to 15 million ounces per annum. But you quickly do some math in your head. You go, oh, let's see, silver's 25 bucks, or maybe it's a little more today. And they're producing, call it 12 million ounces of silver. And, that lead zinc is going to pay for the costs. That means their silver is basically their free cash flow. That's a way to think of it. Okay, 12 million ounces of silver at 25 bucks an ounce. Yeah, that's about 300 million U.S. Okay, that's amazing. These types of deposits absolutely kill a pig when it comes to economics. Pan American's operating there. There's other deposits that are currently being developed. There's other styles like the the Andean guys, for example, are mining the oxide material, you know, where this is basically the near surface oxide material, but they're also dealing with this polymetallic stuff. Again, they're making great money. These are great deposits. They make a lot of money.
Well, Quentin, there's no doubt that there's a lot of metal at this deposit and over wide intercepts, and there's a lot of continuity. So some of the other questions have been like, hey, there's no doubt this is looking like a good deposit. It's still early days, and there's still a lot of exploration to go. But some of the chatter has also been, are there any deleterious elements in there that would be smelter penalties? And what kind of concentrates would you have to produce from this many different types of metals? Do you have any handle on that yet, or is it still too early to be looking at that? I know you would need to do some MET testing and everything, but what will the company do as you move down the pike on the MET testing and determine what kind of concentrates you'd produce?
Certainly. Look, what we have in hand right now is the multi-element data from analyses of our drill core. We can see a wide spectrum of elements. I think there's on the order of 50 elements that are reported in that data. It includes a lot of the deleterious elements. Okay, so things like arsenic and, you know, some people say, well, cadmium is deleterious. Well, it is, but if it's in high enough concentration, the smelters will make a concerted effort to collect that, collect that metal. In other words, it can go from being a penalty metal to actually payable metal, at least at the smelter. So that's up for debate. But arsenic is actually reasonably low. It's in the, you know, few hundred ppm. That's pretty consistent with most base metal deposits of any type that I've seen. So no, I don't see high deleterious elements. I don't see, there's certainly no significant mercury, antimony is fairly low. You know, these are the ones you worry about most. I don't see them here. We're doing MET work, so the company will have more detailed data in the next few months. But I look around at analogs, okay, and I look around at all the deposits in this region, and all of them generate really high-grade, high-quality concentrates. In this case, in theory at least, without having all the MET data back yet, what I would likely conclude at this point is this will make a great tin concentrate through gravity. It will make a wonderful zinc concentrate of sphalerite through flotation. The lead will also be targeted, and you'll probably also scavenge copper too. Okay, so you'll have multiple concentrates. Things like silver will likely report with lead. That is typically the case. Maybe some of it goes to the zinc, don't know. Things like gold will often also report with the lead. We do have a bit of gold here in there. So yes, like all of these metals will basically go down their respective, pigeonhole, like in terms of processing. They'll each come out in a flow sheet, a technique that's well-defined and is used elsewhere across a number of these deposits in Bolivia.
All right, Quentin, let's focus a bit on the drilling that is still ongoing here. So the news release says the company has already completed 46 diamond drill holes for a total of a little over 22,000 meters. There are still 3 rigs on site. Give us a little insights into where the news will be coming from, where these drills are drilling, and what you hope to prove with the continued drilling.
Okay, we got 3 rigs turning at site. Just like you said, 2 of them are surface rigs. They're drilling from drill pads on surface. One of them is an underground rig. And what we're trying to do is do enough drilling. Bill Pearson, who's overseeing the project along with Oswaldo Arce, do intend to drill enough to put together a resource at some point. It's going to largely focus on the northern area where we've got most of our drill results, like these here, back right now. So the underground rig is actually drilling from some small artisanal adits up in that area. There is, historic production or historic exploration through adits, and they're big enough to get a drill rig in. So like this DHK-18, which was announced today, is actually drilled from underground. All right, so that rig's going to continue drilling. By the way, it saves a lot of meters when you drill from underground. Anyway, it's going to continue drilling that general area to infill and help develop that resource. Now, the 2 surface rigs, one of them's down around the central breccia. It's drilling from surface and testing, testing outwards, looking for the limits of the system. And, it's remarkable, but we have yet to find the limits of the darn thing. every hole that we drill, you know, we continue to see mineralization. So that surface rig at Central will keep drilling a series of radial holes there. And then the other rig, the third rig, which is also a surface rig, is finishing up a series of drill holes down at Porco. Porco is another breach of pipe down at the southern end, or the I should say the south margin of the caldera. And it has drilled a series of holes. We've talked about those. A lot of sulfide mineralization in all of those holes. Again, we have yet to find the limits of the system. That rig, once it's done drilling the hole that it's on right now, I believe it's going to move to the area kind of between Porco and Central. The reason is we believe there is a very well-defined target in this what we call gap zone between Central Breccia and Porco. So it's going to start testing there. So basically right now what we're trying to do is really infill the immediate target for resource, but also gradually step out from these with these surface rigs, trying to feel our way out and around this system. Ultimately we will define the limits of it. I don't know when, but it's growing and growing every time we drill a hole right now.
Well, Quentin, there's absolutely a lot of work going on by the company and a lot of interesting drilling to come. Over the next, let's say, few months, what are the main things investors should keep their eye on, or what's the main takeaway you want investors to get about the work that Alora is doing on exploration right now?
This system is best thought of as a completely preserved podocyte-type system. We've demonstrated that now. We've hit tin porphyry, okay? There's been several news releases in which holes show clearly we have a high-grade tin system in places here. We have other areas where we're seeing the zinc, lead, silver mineralization and, bits of gold and copper and so forth. What people have to understand is that we have the entire system preserved here. There is no erosion of significance that's taken it down and say, taken off a lot of the cream part of the system. It's still sitting there in the subsurface. It's a pristine podocyte-type system. Remarkable deposit. It's going to take a while to drill out. It's a huge system, but it is an amazing discovery. I think it'll be one of the biggest discoveries of this type in a generation.
Okay, that wraps up this weekend show. Again, I hope you all enjoyed the weekend show. I hope everybody in Canada has a great long weekend. Please keep all the emails coming, fleck@kereport.com or shad@kereport.com. Let us know what companies you're interested in, who you want to see on the show, and what topics you want to hear more about. Everyone, thanks for tuning in this weekend. I look forward to getting back at it next week and keeping you all up to date.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.